My guest on Dan Really Likes Wine this week is somebody who I share a little sliver of cultural heritage with, because when I was 16 years old, I lived in Australia for a year, had a great time, learned very little of an academic nature, many life lessons. My guest lived in Australia for a while and learned far more than I did in his time there, because it came to shape exactly what he now does for a living. Mike Radcliffe, my sort of very, very briefly fellow Australian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dan. And hi to everybody out there listening.
Hey, you were in Adelaide, weren't you?
I was in Adelaide. Yeah, I did a post. It was a higher certificate in wine marketing. And it was a great time in my life. It was the first time it had ever been offered anywhere in the world. And I remember when I went into the first class, there were only three of us in the first class. And at the end of the lecture, because the lecturer had never presented anything like this, he went very quiet and eventually said, "So what do you guys think?"
Do you approve of my class?
Exactly.
And to be fair, you probably could have given some quite decent feedback, not just because you'd had a reasonable academic background up to that point, but because wine does flow through the Radcliffe veins. You come from a family, certainly looking at, well, headlined by your incredible mother, where wine really is a big part of who the Radcliffes were and continue to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've had a good place to learn. It's been very fertile ground. Both my sister and I, she's also a Cape wine master, has been in the wine industry her whole life. And in fact, I had dinner with my mom last night, so she's in fighting good form.
She's an incredible woman who did so much to break a lot of the molds in South African wine. You've done similar in a slightly different way, but she's somebody who, from let's have Cabernet Franc as a single varietal and champion it, to hang on, women can be part of the Cape Winemakers Guild, to lots of things that now we look at and think, yeah, but we've always drunk Cabernet Franc. We've always had women winemakers. When Norma Radcliffe was blazing her trail, she was very much an isolated example.
It's really funny that you bring it up, because we had this conversation last night and I mentioned to her that in a few weeks I'm going to be in London and I'll be staying at a club that I'm a member of. And she said, you know, she used to go to London every year for decades, and she always got asked to present wine tastings at the men's clubs, but she was never allowed to stay and she always had to use the back stairs.
It's crazy how that world, which is not really that long ago, did exist. It's changed dramatically. And I think that's a big part of your wine journey, has been that sense of changing, of seeing opportunities, seeing what we can do, having a huge amount of fun with it, certainly, but also playing your part in changing the nature of South African wine.
Yeah, I think that the industry has needed change. Conversely, the industry has wanted to change. So that means that it hasn't been as hard for the industry as it might have been in other places. But yes, I think we're on a path, but I don't think the industry is where it needs to be yet. There is considerable amount that still needs to be done. But just going back to the concept 20 or 30 years ago of a female winemaker being strange, and today you look around and some of the greatest wines in the country are made by women and nobody raises an eyebrow. So we do have the capacity for change in, frankly, a very short period of time.
Your mum was a huge part of that. She was also a huge part in starting off the Mike Radcliffe story. Do you remember the first glass of wine? Do you remember starting through your family life to learn a bit about wine?
I certainly do. It was early. I was young. I'd yet to wear closed shoes, I think. And probably like many people in the wine industry and many South Africans, I was given literally a thimble of a glass that had a little bit of sweet muscadel or port in it.
Watered down or full strength?
No, I think it was full fat muscadel, KWV if I remember. But it was literally just about a thimble. But I guess it was about the routine and the culture of enjoying a drink, a wine with a meal, which was ingrained into me at a very young age. And to this day, nothing has really changed. The thimble got bigger, though.
And more repetitively used. The Norma Radcliffe story is now so entrenched in what we do. Was that a big part of why you ended up in the wine industry? Was there ever a chance that it might have been Mike Radcliffe the dentist or Mike Radcliffe the plumber? Or do you think wine was always going to be the end result?
So, you know, the best way to learn how to be a parent is to look at your own parents. And so I've got an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old daughter at the moment. And so what's going through my brain is exactly what probably went through my parents' brain. I can say comfortably that my parents never pressured me at all into joining the wine industry. In fact, I finished school, joined the Navy, went to university, studied business, and then I went traveling and I worked abroad for, I think it was 6 years. At no stage did I feel a pressure to join the family business. And that's probably why when I did join the family business, I joined with such gusto because it was my idea. And I didn't have that residual pressure. And in the same way, right now, I'm trying to take those learnings and apply them to my parenting skills with my kids and say, guys, there's no pressure here. There's something that you can definitely get involved with and something magical here, but it's your call.
I love your family business for many reasons. The wine, certainly, the history, the heritage. Also because it was where we celebrated the day after my wedding and where my mother, after I'd married into a Greek family, thought she could now Greek dance by virtue of her son's choice of family to marry into and broke her leg after falling off a table trying to dance. There might have been 8 bottles of Warwick Chardonnay involved in that particular process. It was then and it remains a beautiful space. But also one that's got a lot of charm, a lot of appeal to it. And yet it was one you decided you wanted to say goodbye to. And you had, I think you'd had for a while, exit strategy, I think the word you used, a very corporate one, but one that you'd clearly had a look at where you were and where you felt you could go and what needed to be the next step in the Warwick journey.
Yeah. Not everything happens according to a plan. And while I'm very good at planning, some things just happen. And in this case, I think it was more a case of this just happened. Warwick was in an extremely good place. I had been managing director for well over 20 years, I think maybe even closer to 25. But simultaneously, I'd been building and running and being managing director of Villafonte. And, you know, running two, let's call them senior wineries, takes quite a lot. And I was feeling that a lot of things were starting to slip because both companies were growing. And so fortuitously, an opportunity came along, which was supported by my family, especially since my sister lives in Canada. And so we took the decision. With hindsight, it was the best decision for myself, for my immediate family, and for my greater family. But there's no regrets because I look at, and I always have looked at my life in chapters, and I can slice up the last 50 years into very clean and crisp chapters in which there was a start, a middle, and an ending. And each one of those I'm equally proud of. And even as we speak, I'm currently in the middle of a particular chapter, and I can see the end of that chapter ahead of me on one or two of the things that I'm doing. And that too will close. So it was a great time in my life. It was a great time for my family, but it was the right decision. And things are in a very good place at the moment.
Particularly with Villafonte, which the sale of Warwick and the move on has allowed you to focus on. It's a brand that's, I think, quite different in so many ways to the majority of South African. You've got this very strong American heritage to it in terms of some proper Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi type wine talent who were behind it when you started off. But I think you also, and I'm not sure how much of this was just a bit of good luck and timing and how much of it was you being a prescient sort, but you entered the premium South African red wine space at just about the right time, I think, where you could start saying, you know what, we have got the space for this sort of brand that charges this sort of money because it's delivering this sort of quality and this sort of look and feel.
Some things, like I said earlier, just happen, and some things are done according to a plan. Villafonte did have a lot of planning. And I'll digress slightly because in the different leadership roles that I have or have had in the wine industry over the years, it's afforded me a number of opportunities to speak publicly. And one of the common themes that I've been speaking publicly about for decades, literally, is the word confidence. And to this day, I'll say it again on this platform to say, our wines are better than we think they are. and our offering is better than we think it is. And to this day, when foreign commentators speak about South African wine, they tend to start with these wines are such good value. But what they're actually saying is these wines are incredibly cheap relative to the competition. And while I don't like to hark on about price, because every single product has a value, irrespective of the price, I do think that it is something that needs to be addressed in the industry. And going back to your question, we surrounded ourselves in a veil of confidence from the very beginning, and that was the luxury of partnering with incredible Americans who were unencumbered by apartheid, who were unencumbered by decades of feeling maybe that there was something to prove. And when they came to South Africa and when we partnered, they were very clear. They said, there is no reason why South Africa cannot produce wines which are as good, if not better, than the greatest wines in the world, wines that will sit very comfortably and confidently on the tables of the greatest wine collectors and the greatest restaurants. We should try that. And that's how Villafonte started. And so it was a path. It was a journey. It was intentional. And like anything creative, we're still on that journey.
You have a role that's far beyond just Villafonte. You've got a big role in South African wine. And this conversation has played out in many forms a number of times for me this year, where as much as it is something that helps us, the day when we no longer speak of South African wine being great value will be a day for us to dance in the streets and pop Cup Classique corks and just yell triumphantly that we are where we deserve to be. And we will get there for many reasons. One of them is the wine that you've chosen to open today. Now, I said we could open any wine you wanted, hoping that you'd bring out a 61 Lafite, but you've gone with the next best thing. And this is your brand new release. 27 years ago, I think these grapes were first planted. So there's been a bit of time already to the Villafonte story. As we try this new 2022 Series C, is there still the same level of excitement? There's still schoolboy butterflies when a new vintage hits the market for the first time for you?
In short, yes. Every single vintage tells a story. Ultimately, we are in the business of storytelling, and we need to walk a fine line between reflecting the vintage and being vintage specific, but at the same time, not reflecting any kind of inconsistency of quality. And so it is a very fine line for a winemaker. The excitement is definitely still there because we are still on a path. We've embarked on a Villafonte 100-year plan, which is driving everything that we do at the moment. And I often use the metaphor of the swan gliding serenely across the very calm pond. And that's what Villafonte is. To the consumer, our packaging never changes. Our products never change. We have a consistency of message, a consistency of communication. But underneath the surface of the water, there is an incredible amount of activity, mostly good, but generally innovative from viticulture and winemaking point of view, trying new things all the time. But at the end of the day, I think that a quarter century of innovation is certainly reflected in this new vintage. And if I can reflect back to 2 minutes ago when I was speaking about confidence, this is one of the most confident vintages we've ever made. It doesn't feel the need to shout. It doesn't feel the need to flex. It is calm. It is confident, reflects the vintage perfectly, and is a wine that you will be able to uncork tonight as a young wine and enjoy it, but have incredible confidence that this wine will age beautifully over the next 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I was going to mention exactly that. Here is a wine that I think we've kind of been conditioned. This is premium red, therefore we must put it at the bottom of a cupboard somewhere, bury it in a corner of the cellar, and only come back to it in 10, 15 years' time. And you can certainly do that, and it's going to be an utter joy if you do, and you've got more patience than most if you can, but you can drink it now, and you're not going to have this assault of tannins ripping the palate out of your mouth. It sits very, very comfortably as is.
It follows the theme. It's got the line of Villafonte that runs through it. It tastes like Villafonte. In the last quarter century, we've never bought a grape. We've never sold a grape. Every grape in every single bottle that we've ever produced has come from our from our property. We've farmed it, and we've built up an incredible treasure trove of intellectual knowledge, of academic capacity that we can retroactively apply back to every vintage, to the extent that you can start de-risking vintage variation, because when you see certain things happen, you can reflect back to 2014 or 2007, for example, and say, hang on, we've seen this before. We probably know what the outcome is going to be. And so that de-risking is another way of saying we're vastly more experienced. And especially since we've been making the same wine year in, year out, we're just getting better. And that's what the focus is all about, really, about just trying to improve on the past.
Which is why you've got this queue of people trying to get onto your allocation list every year. And that's just great for you guys. And it's really good for South African wine to have that kind of space. When you said goodbye to Warwick, you obviously now had all this time in your hands. You had to try and work out what to do with it. And so before we wrap up over what is just a joyful glass of wine, the other hat that you wear, which has not a Villafonte logo on, but instead a Stellenbosch logo on, because this is home, this is somewhere that you are very passionate about, and you've taken on a couple of roles within Stellenbosch that I've watched you grow through over the last few years, where the direction that Stellenbosch has taken as a destination for those visiting, but also somewhere to be enormously proud of and very aware of if you live here, I think has become a lot more pronounced. And I know it's a big team of you, but it's a team that as chairman you get to play a guiding hand with. And I think you're taking Stellenbosch into a really exciting place.
Yeah, Stellenbosch is in a good place. Through my role as chairman of Visit Stellenbosch, which is the generic tourism body, I'm non-executive chairman, so that means I don't do anything. I just tell everybody else what to do.
It's the ideal role.
Ideal. But I think what my role has really been is about getting a lot of disparate elements from wine tourism to restaurant tourism to accommodation, business tourism, university, getting everybody pointed in the same direction and working towards a common goal that is realized and accepted. And I think that's what I've been able to achieve, and that's pretty exciting. I'm still in the role for another 2 years. So there are some plans that we still want to implement, and in 2 years' time, when my term ends, I expect to be able to hand over to my successor an organization that has maximum momentum. The flywheel will be flying, and I think that there's incredible opportunities. There are also incredible challenges. Mass tourism is one of the biggest things that threatens Stellenbosch, as well as the greater winelands, of having our Minister of Tourism who's trying to get, 100 million people from Asia and America and Europe here. It threatens to destroy it. So we need to protect against that as well. So the challenges are big, and not everything is rosy, but it's in pretty good shape.
If we go back in closing to those Adelaide days, to the three of you in class and your lecturer hoping that the class has gone okay, and we had a broad report card, not on how well you've done, because I think we can all see that, but on how richly rewarded you feel by the journey that this wine story has taken you on. How close to the A+ are we sitting?
Pretty high and pretty close. I have the privilege of working with great people all the time. Whatever hat that I'm wearing, there are people that are inspirational. I still get inspired all the time, and I still take inspiration all the time. I'm very cognizant of the fact that most of the greatest ideas in the world of wine and wine marketing probably haven't been invented. And if they have been invented, it was probably somebody else who did it. And so there's a lot of incredible people out there that we can learn from, and I do. So it's a rich tapestry, this wine industry. And as I look forward, I have a couple of wishes for the industry, if I may.
Fire away.
The first one is that I would love to see greater momentum and energy in the resurrection of South Africa's great heritage brands. And I'm talking the Niederbergs and the, well, let me not go too far down the line, but we do have incredible brands, even Zonneblom and Tassenberg. And of course, there are a lot of high-end wines that I'd just love to see us resurrect those back to the glory that they once had, the place where they once sat. Because these are the brands that should be celebrated. They've already got 50, 60, sometimes 100 years of heritage, yet they've been neglected. And the second one, delivering extra value at a higher price is not as easy as everyone thinks. And just in closing, we need to be cognizant of the fact that there are many regions in the world. Bordeaux is one of them. Burgundy is another, two of the great wine regions of the world, where value is never used in the conversation. And in fact, the opposite is true, that they are finding a lot of headwinds as a result of not offering value. And so we just need to be sure that we don't allow the pendulum to swing too far. There you go. There's a thought, a seed planted for our next conversation.
Which I shall count down the days to. Mike, thank you. Not just for some lovely wine, and this 22 is drinking marvellously. How long I can keep the rest of my allocation remains to be seen, because it's great already. But thanks to you. You've always been a great supporter of Dan Really Likes Wine. We've had many wonderful conversations and great bottles of wine. And I suspect there are some more adventures together to come. I look forward to those. And I look forward to your wish list becoming something that in 5-10 years time, we look back and say, oh, remember those things Mike said on Dan's show? Well, they've all come true. Well done, Mike Ratcliffe.
Thanks, Dan.
Cheers. The brand new Series C 2022, keeping us company on Dan Really Likes Wine this week with the chair of Stellenbosch Wine Routes, the chair of Stellenbosch Tourism, the man behind Villafonte, and a very good friend of Dan Really Likes Wine, Mike Ratcliffe.